Amid a roiling national debate about the future of education for our poorest children, the new book, The Prize, tells the insider story of Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg's $100 million quest to transform the debilitated Newark, New Jersey public schools and to solve the education crisis in every city in America. The book, The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools, draws on access to Zuckerberg, then Newark Mayor Cory Booker, and New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, interweaving their visions with the realities of Newark's deeply troubled schools and the aspirations of teachers, students, parents, and local activists who know them best. Dale Russikoff spent 28 years as a reporter for The Washington Post covering education, social politics, and other topics, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Very nice to have you. How did you come to this particular story and wanting to look at The Prize and the schools in Newark?
Well, I had been in the New York Bureau of the Washington Post for over 10 years, and I had covered Newark as part of the territory we were responsible for, and I was just drawn to it. I thought it was just an amazing city in terms of what it had been through. You know, Newark is one of the poorest cities on the East Coast, and it's it used to be one of the largest and one of the most vibrant back, you know, before World War II, or, you know, before the 30s anyway, before the Depression. So it really had suffered the way, you know, so much of urban America had suffered, and it had suffered white flight, and it had suffered disinvestment, and it had been so beaten down. The schools had been devastated by, you know, all these upheavals. The state had taken over the schools because they were so corrupt under the political bosses who were running them and using them often for patronage rewards to their friends. In spite of all of this, there was a sort of drive within the city to surmount all these obstacles and change the course of history. You just felt it every time you were in Newark. So when this happened, when, you know, this announcement was made on the Oprah show that Mark Zuckerberg was giving $100 million and the Democratic mayor, Cory Booker, and the Republican governor, Chris Christie, both stars in their own parties, were coming together to try to make this money mean something important for the city schools, it just sounded like to me whatever comes of this is going to be a fascinating story, and I just decided I wanted to dig very deeply into it. Education has interested me throughout my career. And as a reporter, the thing that interests me maybe the most, just as a theme in stories, is like when big public policy ideas are being advanced at the top levels, trying to follow them and see, you know, if they do or don't reach the people they're supposed to help and why or why not. So this was just a moment to look at that in the context of education and some of the nation's poorest kids, and could the democratic process really make a difference for them?
You write about this in the book, but how did the prize come about? Was it as simple as asking for it or making the case? And, I mean, very simply, whose idea was it?
Well, you know, the prize, the title actually refers to the longtime Newark School District budget, which had always been an object of contention between various political bosses in Newark, between parents and teachers versus the bosses. Sometimes the mayor was in charge, sometimes the school board was in charge. The governor, you know, 20 years earlier had taken it over because of corruption in the school district, and now there was an effort for the local people to get it back. And always, even though everyone said they wanted it for the children, that this was a billion-dollar budget, the biggest employer in Newark, and I'm sorry, the biggest public employer, second only to United Airlines among all employers. And so everybody wanted a piece of it, and often what they wanted from it was not about children at all. So that the history of the school district as the prize was the reason for the title. But then, of course, it started having other meanings to me as I went along, because, of course, Zuckerberg's gift was a prize.
Right.
And you were asking, like, how did that come about? Zuckerberg was only 26 at the time, and he hadn't been a billionaire for that long. He founded Facebook at age 19, and he had decided to join something called the Giving Pledge that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett were taking to, you know, all the billionaires in America, asking them to give away half of their wealth before they died. And most of them were, you know, middle-aged or older. But Zuckerberg, at age 26, decided he wanted to start giving away half his wealth, even though, you know, he had barely begun to accumulate it. And so he started looking for a cause, and he and his then-girlfriend, now wife, Priscilla Chan, decided that they wanted their cause to be education. So they began talking just in their very, you know, small, you know, private circles about it. And the word got out to a few people that Mark Zuckerberg wanted to do, quote, something big in education. And it just so happened that Booker and Christie had a few months earlier made this pact where Christie had just been elected governor. And it turned out that even though they were in different parties, they had the exact same views on education. And they decided they wanted to go out and try to raise a lot of money and do a very huge and overwhelming transformation of the Newark schools by bringing in lots of charter schools, which takes philanthropic money to start them, and by bringing in lots of consultants who would rethink the whole management of what was left of the public school traditional district and, you know, reorganize those schools, close the failing schools, change the tenure system so that it would be easier to fire bad teachers and easier to reward good ones. They had all of these plans, and they just needed money to get started. And when Booker heard about, you know, this something big idea that Zuckerberg had, he was eager to meet him. And Cory Booker has a remarkable network of very influential connections all over the place, including in Silicon Valley. And one of those people just happened to be the brother-in-law of Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook. And he was very good friends, or at least, you know, somewhat good friends with Zuckerberg. So he put them all together, and he found out that they were going to all be going to a retreat that's held every summer for billionaires and celebrities and famous politicians. And so he told them they had to talk to each other. And it turned out Booker and Zuckerberg sat down together at a buffet dinner and went for a walk afterwards, and Zuckerberg said, I'm looking for a city that's poised to do something revolutionary in education where my money could make a difference. And Booker said, you know, we've got just the city for you. We've got, you know, only 40,000 students. There's no way we can't count to 40,000 and get them all in high-performing schools. And then he said, you know, you could literally, his phrase was, flip a district, go from a district full of schools that were failing or close to failing and turn them all into high-performing schools. And then you'll have a model that you can take to the whole country. And in one city after the next with schools that are struggling, you can do exactly what you did in Newark, and you can solve the problem of education in urban America. And Zuckerberg said that his reaction was, this is somebody who can make change. This is somebody I want to invest in. He was just swept off his feet. And the two of them came together to the number 100 million. I asked Cory Booker, you know, what was that based on? And he said it really wasn't based on, you know, an accounting of what he thought everything would cost. They felt that it had to be a number big enough that it would make a statement. And he felt that, you know, if it was that big, it would be galvanizing and attract national attention and more funding for what they wanted to do.
And that actually leads perfectly into my next question, which is on the day that Cory Booker and Mark Zuckerberg and Governor Christie announced the gift, how much did they know about the mechanics of where the money was going to go and how it was going to be distributed to, quote, flip that district?
You mean on the day that they announced the gift on Oprah?
Yes. Was there a plan?
No. They had said they wanted to, quote, make Newark into the charter school capital of the nation. So they had a plan to dramatically, aggressively expand the charter schools in Newark. And they had a list of things they wanted to do very generally in the district that actually had been drawn up for them by the McKinsey consulting firm. And that included things like, you know, changing the teacher's contract to increase accountability on teachers for their student performance, and also to pay teachers who were the best performers, to make it easier to fire those who weren't, develop a state-of-the-art data system to evaluate, you know, to use numbers to evaluate the success or shortcomings of everyone in the district. They wanted to bring in a lot of Teach for America teachers. They wanted to develop a, quote, talent pipeline to bring in teachers from all over the country who were the top in their field. there wasn't an emphasis on, you know, the teachers who are in Newark, how many of them are excellent teachers, which, you know, in many cases they are. And it, for those who aren't, what's missing to help them develop into better teachers. It was really about bringing the best talent from around the country to Newark. And that was, you know, kind of a pattern in Newark, that there was always a sense that the community was all deficits and all the pluses were outside of the city, rather than seeing that the community was full of assets and that you should build on those. That was a theme that ran throughout the effort.
One of the things that you write about, and in the short time we have, I'm hoping you can put it into a nutshell, but what does $100 million of private money buy you in a public school district?
Well, that's a really important point, because it sounds like all the money in the world, $100 million.
Right.
But the Newark School District, with only 40,000 students in it at the time, was spending $1 billion a year. So $100 million over 5 years compared to $1 billion every year is like 1/50th of what the district is spending. So the idea that it's going to transform the workings of the system is a little bit, you know, ambitious. And so if you're asking, like, what did they do with it? For one thing, there was a second $100 million that was raised with matching funds from other philanthropists and very wealthy individuals, and also in-kind contributions that philanthropists were already making to local charter schools, Teach for America, education causes in the city in general. So they had a total of $200 million, and of that, $50 million went to a new teacher's contract, which had been the greatest hope of Mark Zuckerberg. He thought that he could have a teacher's contract that would really revolutionize the way teachers were paid and rewarded and punished. And he was hoping that, this was before he really, you know, before he or anyone on his team knew much about Newark, he was hoping that they could pay the best teachers 50% over and above their base salaries, which is kind of not uncommon at Facebook. The top performers might get a 50% bonus. But after the money that Zuckerberg gave ran out, there was no way that the Newark School District could keep giving, you know, the top teachers a 50% bonus. So that idea kind of went away quickly. But his dream was, I mean, he really felt teachers didn't have the status they deserved in society, and that in order to improve education, you needed the best people in America coming out of colleges to want to go into teaching. And in order to do that, you needed to have great compensation, just like he has at Facebook, for his employees. I think a lot of people would agree that would be great if teachers were paid like that and rewarded like that. But in the context of, you know, the existing demands on the school district budget, that wasn't going to happen in Newark. There was also almost $60 million that went to expand charter schools. And there was supposed to be another $50 million that went to other kinds of labor reforms. They were going to try to have a new contract for principals, but there was never an agreement on that. So that money, although it was raised, is still sitting there. And they were going to try to buy out all the, quote, bad teachers without saying how they would define bad. But federal pension law doesn't allow you to just buy out bad teachers. You have to buy out people based on, you know, broad categories, length of service, age, you know. And so I don't know why they didn't know that, but they raised $20 million from a lot of Christie and Booker's political donors, and that money also is still sitting there. And there was actually $20 million spent for private consultants whose main job was to try to come up with what I was saying earlier, these management reforms. They thought that, you know, having more accountability, better data, metrics that you could really measure, you know, how every school was performing. They thought all of those things would translate into higher student achievement. So the bottom line is there's a lot more charter schools in Newark, getting close to now 40% of the city's students are going to be in charter schools. And the district schools have, you know, been closed and consolidated and moved around to a great degree, with thousands of kids being reassigned as the district schools are contracting. I think you could say that, you know, the kids who got into the high-performing charter schools are probably better off, but it's very hard to say that the kids in the district schools are better off. There's been a lot of dislocation The teachers and principals are trying as never before to serve the kids in the district schools, but they have less and less money and resources to meet their needs, and there's really a growing concentration of the most challenging kids in the district schools as the charter sector grows.
Dale Russikoff is the author of the new book, The Prize, Who's in Charge of America's Schools? And she joins us this morning. When you look at what the money went to, which you were just describing, went for a data system, for a system that helped evaluate new teacher, this teacher evaluation system, a merit pay system. So as you point out in the book, a lot of the money went toward these systems. And
yes.
And that turned out to be somewhat detrimental, didn't it?
Well, I don't know that it's detrimental. I think that the system was not, the district itself was not being run in an efficient, effective way. It was very, there were many kind of antiquated and, even dysfunctional programs there. So I think that it was, that a lot of those things were necessary. It's just that the emphasis on that over getting money to the classroom to help the teachers meet the challenges of the kids coming in every day with the issues that living in Newark raises for them. The teachers in the schools were left without a lot of support to do that. There's also been, the money to the individual funding of the schools, the district schools, has been cut. So there's a lot of art and music programs that are gone, things that really did help make the school day a lot more enjoyable and meaningful for kids. And some of those programs were really important to inspiring and moving kids to get them to work harder in math and English classes, and those are increasingly gone now.
The management systems were necessary, but as you just indicated, much more support was needed at the classroom level for kids, especially who were behind academically and had a lot going on in their lives, violence
yes.
and poverty and strife in the family.
Exactly. And there's, that is not an exception to the rule in Newark. That's a very common profile of the children in the Newark schools. It's a very, very tough city. There was a day a couple weeks ago that there were 5 murders and, 10 murders in 10 days. And it's a city that kids are living in, sometimes it feels like they're living in a war zone and they're still coming to school, but they're not coming to school in the same condition that a suburban kid is.
When you look at the sort of follow the money, is what we're always told, right? Follow the money. So
right.
When you follow the money in this particular case, obviously some good things were done. And as you indicated a moment ago, there's still money in there in the system that's waiting to be used. So where are we in this? Is the jury still out on how this all went?
Well, I think that the community in Newark feels, just as a whole, that this went badly. And they're very eager for it to be over and for this new chapter to come where the local people will be in control and at least they'll have, they'll feel that they can influence what's happening in their schools again.
And I just want to interrupt for a moment, and I apologize,
yeah.
but because it's an important part of the book, which we haven't mentioned yet, which is how the community was ultimately bypassed in all of this. That when the money came in, there were a lot of people who thought that they knew better than the people who were actually in the community and were a part of the school district.
Yes, there was basically an assumption by Mayor Booker and Governor Christie and Commissioner Cerf, who was the state commissioner that Christie brought in to run the Newark district reforms, and to some extent the superintendent, Cammie Anderson, who they appointed, that, the community is really the problem. They're full of special interests, and they just want their jobs, and they don't really care about children. And the best thing to do is just to bypass them and do what's best for children. And there was a lot of talk about We know what's best for kids. All we want to do is what's best for kids, as if, you know, the parents and the teachers and the people of Newark didn't. And it became, you know, there was supposed to be a huge community engagement effort at the beginning of this to inform the community about what was going on, make sure people understood, and actually get, you know, ideas, like supposedly to air the ideas of the reform so that people could respond and say, you know, whether you're missing something or whether this has already been tried and it failed, something like that. So there were 10 community engagement sessions, and they paid a political consultant from New York City almost $2 million to run these things. He didn't know his way around Newark at all. He didn't even know the city, much less know how to get around it. And his PR firm that he hired was also from New York, and they routinely gave me the wrong address to go to when there was going to be a meeting. They didn't even know how to get around the city. These people were planning the future of the Newark schools, you know, on the kind of shocking assumption that they knew best when they didn't even know how to, you know, get from one side of town to the other.
The ups and downs of the story, which you write about beautifully, is, although it is troubling, of course, there's a kid in the book, a young boy, who comes to seventh grade. He's reading at a second grade reading level. He's had trouble all of his life, and because of some of the efforts that have been put in place, he starts to make great progress with help from the teachers and the principals and a basketball coach. And you talk about how exciting that is to witness how this child starts to do really, really well. Then he moves to high school. The programs are not in place there. He starts to fail. Then he witnesses the murder of his best friend. And as you point out, this is just one kid, but it's also very emblematic of what can happen and what does happen in Newark and other schools like it throughout this country. And these are things that are really hard to solve with a lot of money.
Yes, they are. But what, you know, and I have to say, you know, this kid, after all these things happened to him in his freshman year at high school, the school reform plan that, you know, came out at the end of his freshman year resulted in the closure of his high school, and he was sent across town to a different high school. And because the reform plan had taken up so much administrative energy, there were a lot of breakdowns at the school levels in just simple management. So he didn't have a proper schedule when he got to this school. Mm. And his entire first semester of his freshman year, he had no English classes and no math classes. And he was a kid who desperately, he needed to have more than one English class because he was so far behind and struggling so much. But, you know, he wasn't the only one. This was just a breakdown. And again, you know, the people who said that we came here to help the kids, you know, they weren't focusing on the individual kids. Now, as for what happened to him, you know, why did it go so well for him and why did it break down? I think that there's just a lack of consistency. You know, what happened for him at his middle school was that there was a whole group of teachers and his basketball coach and his vice principal and his principal who just almost wrapped themselves around him like, a cushion almost. And there was a special education teacher who was learning a new technique for working with kids who had failed to learn in the regular classroom. And she was not, you know, a young Teach for America newbie. She was a 20-year veteran teacher, and she was just fantastic at reaching kids who had failed and failed and failed because, you know, she would find that there was a learning issue underneath all of that hadn't been identified. And so she said to him, you know, look, I know that you get in trouble a lot, and I'm not judging you, but I just want to hear in your own words, why does that happen? And he said, well, if I act up and I get thrown out of class, nobody finds out I can't read. And so, you know, once he kind of acknowledged that he couldn't read, and she reached him in a really special way, they started working every day together. And while he started seventh grade at a second grade reading level, he finished at a fifth grade reading level in 1 year. And his sounding out word skills on the test he took were eighth grade level, which was even a year ahead of where he was. And it was, you know, so this was a kid who had failed so continually throughout his life that he didn't know what to do to succeed. He didn't believe he could succeed, and it took this Herculean effort to get him to try. Well, when he went to high school, there was no kind of packet that went with him saying, alert, alert, this boy needs to have a network around him because he's at a fragile point. He's succeeded for the first time in his life and he's going to high school and needs help. You know, had there been some kind of a support system that went with him, you think, well, maybe he could have had another good year or at least a better year than he had. And I think that is such a problem in schools, that what happens one year isn't followed up. It might be a great year followed by a terrible year. And, there has to be a lot more consistency. Kids like that really need it. He's 17 years old now and he's failing again. And in a city like that, if you're failing and you're 17 years old, you're in serious peril.
The book is really powerful and quite disturbing, and it is it's wonderfully written, and it's a sterling example of why we need great journalists. Dale Resikoff's book is The Prize: Who's in Charge of America's Schools? Dale, thank you so much for sharing with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I really got a lot out of the conversation.
Thank you very much for the great work. Appreciate it. Again, the title of the book is The Prize: Who's in Charge of America's Schools? It is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.